Hello, everyone. I'm Jeremy Ryan.
And I'm Heavenly Ryan.
And you're listening to the Ethan Allen Radio. Yes, we got a new name. When we did the first show, we hadn't actually decided on a name yet. Now we have one. It's Ethan Allen Radio. For the last month, we have been struggling to decide on what a good name for the show would be, and it just hit us. We went to the Ethan Allen Tower celebration, and while we're hearing about all the great things Ethan Allen did, it hit us that he was actually very libertarian, and being that one of our goals for the show is that people explore the ideas of libertarianism, it just made sense for us to name the show after him. Also, the website is now online, and it's first draft at ethanallenradio.com. That's ethanallenradio.com. Check it out and let us know what you think. We have a comment form and an email sign-up form, so you can let us know about... We can let you know about future updates, events, and information regarding the show. Yeah, I mentioned earlier that Heavenly and I went to the Ethan Allen Tower celebration. Heavenly, you want to talk more about that?
Sure. We actually attended the Ethan Allen Tower celebration. That was on August 13th, a Saturday. It's the actual centennial celebration from when the tower was erected on 1905 to 2005. It's a celebration of the 100th anniversary of the Norman-style tower in Ethan Allen Park, which is just off North Avenue here in the New North End. It was built by the Vermont Society of the Sons of the American Revolution to honor Ethan Allen's life and deeds as a memorial to him and his Green Mountain Boys. Basically, they just had the event to increase awareness and pride of the community's efforts to protect and enhance natural areas and preserve the historic heritage. They had several events going on during the day. It started at 8 in the morning, having some birding tours in Ethan Allen Park with Lindy Millington and Pat Brace Reed. And from 9 to 10 in the morning, they had a tour of the park, a full tour with three fellow citizens here in the New North End. From 10 to 11:45, they had a good-sized parade. It started on Heinberg Road, just past the Senior Center, and then heading south on North Avenue to the park. Included in the groups that were in the parade was the Vermont National Color Guard, the Sons and Daughters of the American Revolution Color Guard, Hannaford's Fife and Drum Corps, the Rice High School Drum and Flags, the State Veterans of Foreign Wars, the Elks 916 Color Guard, Shriners Motor Unit, Antique Cars, Clowns, and a whole bunch of other people were participating, as well as the Green Party, which actually participated in the last minute. They were actually starting to raise a fuss about the Green Parties being included in the parade, but they eventually let them go. But after the parade, there was, at 11:45, there were ceremonies from the Green Mountain Chorus, some essay and model student contest winners from local schools that they held from the Ethan Allen, the Sons of the American Revolution. They had a contest basically on how to design a poster for the event. Also, Mayor Clavelle and Governor Douglas were also there, as well as Major General Martha Rainville. Conducting over the ceremonies was the Department of Parks and Recreation, Rain Gross. He's the director of the Parks and Recreation Department. Also, there were officers from the Sons of American Revolution that were officiating the ceremonies as well, and descendants of Ethan Allen. From 1 o'clock to 2 o'clock, there was a formal rededication of the tower and ribbon cutting. With Mayor Clavelle, Governor Douglas, and other attendees from the Sons of American Revolution and the Chittenden County Historical Society. Basically, throughout till about 5 in the afternoon, they had events for the community, including like an ice cream social, cake and ice cream social. Also, there was a mention the next day in the Times Argus from Nick Muller and Kevin Graffagnino, I'm sorry if I mispronounced his name, in regard to the new book that was just recently released that was mentioned at the ceremony. The new book is called The Quotable Ethan Allen, and it's basically a quick 70-page book, I believe, from quotes actually from Ethan Allen from his diaries and his journals from when he was helping build Vermont. It starts with his threats against New Yorkers who were claiming title to land in present-day Vermont that Allen and his allies had believed that they secured through dealings with New Hampshire. I guess after losing a land rights case in New York, Ethan Allen told New York's Attorney General to be careful in dealing with Allen himself and his fellow Yankee settlers, because his quote here is, "The gods of the valleys are not the gods of the hills," he warned. And I guess this is a typical comment that he made. It was original, vaguely threatening, rather obscure. And the attorney asked him what he meant by that. He just suggested that the attorney visit Bennington, where the meaning would be made very clear to him. Of course, that was the Battle of Bennington. Grafino and Mr. Muller are very, they come to a conclusion that he's very unique in that he basically, he worked to create more of a stand against other states that are trying to basically take over Vermont, like New York was trying to take over Vermont. But he stood up for the Vermont people and tried to keep them in their own, under their own rule, basically. Mr. Grafino says, in one of his quotes here, he says, "Working on the book was a useful reminder me of the fervor, passion, and emotion in which he approached things. He wasn't sitting on any fences. He was bold and audacious. It's helpful to read what Ethan Allen had to say so that you remember to take some chances in your own life and career." And this article was from the Times Argus on the Sunday following the celebration.
Okay, very good. Is there a place where people can get this book online?
Not online at the moment. I believe the Vermont Historical Society, they do have a website, but they unfortunately don't have it listed on their website just yet because it just barely came out last week. But if you call them directly, they will be able to take your order for it directly.
Do we have a number for that yet?
No, I don't have it on hand, but I could put it on the website for future reference.
Sure, we'll go ahead and do that with this podcast information. Okay, and yeah, you mentioned earlier about the, you know, Green Party having troubles getting in the parade. I remember that, and one of the reasons they were cited was because they didn't have enough insurance liability, something to that effect. But we noticed in the parade that they had quite a few different commercial entities in the parade, and that weren't necessarily, you know, like the usual public things like police and stuff.
Yeah, they actually had Jazzercise in the parade, which I'm not sure how it kind of relates to Ethan Allen, but they actually were there dancing down the street in the parade. So.
Yeah, it just appears to me that if they're going to allow private entities in there, you know, and pay for the insurance, pay their way into the parade, they can allow some, you know, political party in there as well.
Yes, I don't see really why. I mean, there's not really much liability. The Greens were actually behind horse and carriage that came actually late to the event. They were like 5 or 10 minutes late and held up the whole parade. So I'm not sure why the Green Party was there on time and they had to wait for the buggy that wasn't even there on time. So
yeah, that's interesting. Next, I would like to talk about the recent Supreme Court decision regarding eminent domain. In case you haven't heard about this, the Supreme Court found that since public use is not defined in the U.S. Constitution, it is up to the individual states and localities to define public use when authorizing eminent domain confiscations. The court decision allows such public use to include commercial use by private entities if a state finds it in the public interest. Many people assume that eminent domain can only be used for things like roads, parks, and utilities. However, this has certainly not always been the case in Vermont, particularly in Burlington. A while back, we saw the Champlain Street Urban Renewal Project. It's a documentary about what happened in Burlington in the late 60s with urban renewal, where many working-class residents lost their homes to make way for upscale private redevelopment. You want to talk more about that, Heavenly?
Sure. We actually, while we were browsing the DVD selection at the Fletcher Library, we came across this DVD. And being a Burlington resident, I'd like to familiarize myself with some of the history. And back, since I haven't lived here my whole life, I would not know. But the DVD I came across is the Champlain Street Urban Renewal Project. They have two copies of this at the Fletcher Library. It was produced and edited by and written by Patrick Farrington. He's actually the brother of of a friend of ours. And his wife, Julie Dutra Farrington, also helped produce this as well. Basically, a summary of it is basically, imagine being forced out of your home to make way for commercial development. It happened to families living in Champlain Street urban renewal area in the 1960s. Seemingly forgotten piece of Burlington's past comes to life with this documentary through heartfelt interviews with former residents and individuals near to the process. He basically interviewed about 10 different people here that was involved with the urban renewal process. Those were most important people here in Burlington, Dick Bove, Victoria Dutra, Monica Simon Farrington, and Art Hogan. Art Hogan is actually on our steering committee here in Ward 4 and 7's Neighborhood Planning Assembly. So it came to a great surprise to me that I was actually involved in this process. Again, as I said, there's two copies of the DVD available, and also my husband and I, Jeremy, also have a copy, so if you wish to borrow ours, we would gladly lend it out to you if you like. Also, there's a mention of ongoing urban renewal. There might possibly be an urban, actually eminent domain case in St. Johnsbury. I don't know if Jeremy would like to talk about that.
Yeah, we heard about that recently. It's not finalized yet, but apparently the residents there are quite up in arms about it. And there was an article about it a while back. And I think it's a great example of eminent domain abuse. There's a lot of comments from people involved at the local level, from the local government, which are pretty disturbing. A couple of them stuck out to me. There's a comment by Joel Schwartz, involved with the development. He says, "It's something you don't want to do, but you can do it." What I just couldn't imagine. I can't believe he said that. And, you know, he basically saying he agrees that it's a bad thing to do, but they're going to do it simply because they can. And it's this is obviously someone you don't want to trust with much power. Also, you have the selectman, Byron Quattrini, saying he's fed up with the Bay Street property owners. Either they get on the train or forget it. That's what he said at the meeting. He says, "I think we've done enough hand-holding." You know, this certainly seems like something that could play out, you know, similar to what happened here in Burlington. And it seems like with the recent Supreme Court case ruling that a lot of local localities and states will now take that as that they have the power to do this, and they don't even need to worry about any fights from people because now they've been granted ultimate power to be able to do this. So I think it's something we need to work on to make it the current eminent domain laws stricter to prohibit this kind of property transfer. I'd also like to mention that the Vermont Libertarian Party has issued recently issued a press release regarding the issue of eminent domain, and the party is calling upon members of the Vermont Senate to initiate amendment to the Vermont Constitution language to restrict its power of the eminent domain. I urge anyone listening that's concerned about eminent domain to write your legislature and urge Governor Douglas to sign the eminent domain pledge at castlecoalition.org. That's castlecoalition.org, and we'll put the link on the website. And that's at ethanallenradio.org. The pledge states the following: "I pledge to the citizens of this state that I will oppose efforts by my state government or municipalities within my state to use the government power of eminent domain for private development. I support legislation and other efforts to ensure that citizens of the state are safe from eminent domain for private development." And the Castle Coalition is urging all governors to sign this pledge and ensure that eminent domain is properly followed, not abused. Yeah, getting back to the Champlain Project, can you tell me more about what areas were actually covered by that?
Well, it actually covered 3-square-block area, starting from actually College Street in the corner of College and Battery, from where the current Pomerleau condos are. Stretching all the way up to Pearl Street in Battery, currently where the Episcopal Church is, all the way to beside Bove's current restaurant, which is located on Pearl Street, all the way to the current the new courthouse that's on College Street, I believe, or actually no, it's on beside the parking garage there near Church Street. It actually is a very large area, and just imagine how many families and little and small businesses were in that area before they actually were displaced. And the documentary by Farrington, he actually mentions that several of them were relocated here in the New North End, in the Village Green area, mainly. Some of those were Victoria Dutra. She was actually the last one to leave the Champlain Street area. She actually was threatened by some of the developers that came to her house. I believe they called it the Dutra Ponderosa. And she was actually threatened from a person that was working for Art Hogan. And that's basically the area that was covered in the project.
Yeah, I remember in the video she was specifically, you know, would yell at the people to come into her house to try to get her out, you know, basically telling Art Hogan she wasn't leaving. I was saying, go back and you tell him I'm not leaving. And she just kept on staying. And I believe she was like, yeah, she was the last person to leave.
Yeah, she actually, I believe, from what I remember correctly in the documentary, that she was there for, I believe, either a few weeks or about a month. Until she just finally decided to forget it because there's no one else that's there supporting her. And some of the other people they interviewed, they were wondering if we had just gotten together as a group and just all stayed in our houses, they might not have done it. They might still be there today instead of the Wyndham or, like, the Palmer-Lowe's condos. So.
Yeah, yeah, it reminds me, and many of these people were paid, you know, very little money. And I think that's a strategy that the towns use, is that since they have control over assessments, they can, you know, reassess someone's property at a lower rate and then take it over through eminent domain and claim they're paying a fair value, but they set the values.
Yeah, actually, I believe, I remember from a council meeting a couple months ago, Dick Bowe, who's one of the families that was moved out of the Champlain Street area, he was displaced from the area, he came and spoke and addressed the council regarding the recent reappraisal. He started his speech as, well, it's kind of funny now that I'm actually can say I was born in the Wyndham parking lot. And everyone just started cracking up laughing except for me and Jeremy. And we're like, why are they laughing? Do they not know exactly what happened?
Yeah, it's pretty sad. A lot of people were just kicked out of their house. And then they were paid so little. I remember people were saying that in the video, I think it was like around $2,000, $3,000 for each of these properties, which are now worth hundreds of thousands of dollars. Particularly, Parmel's condos, you know, they're, I mean, the top one's $1 million, and a lot of the worst ones are $150,000 or $250,000, I can't remember, but they're worth a hell of a lot more than the people originally paid for them. And now I believe the Westlake is the last piece of property that they stole, right?
Yeah, the Westlake portion that they're developing on the corner on Battery Street there beside Wyndham, they're actually, it's the last piece they're able to develop, and they're actually adding another story onto the Filene's parking garage. So actually, that's the last piece they're developing from that Champlain Street Urban Renewal Project that they've seized from property owners.
Yeah, we discussed about that, those two pieces. What other things were included that we now have that replaced the properties, private properties with?
Burlington Town Center Mall, the portion where Filene's is, that's actually a part of the project. Several government buildings, like three probably to five government buildings, are on that premises, as well as the Wyndham, Palmer-Lowe's condos, the Westlake, as we just mentioned, and the Episcopal Church that's there on the corner of Battery and Pearl Street. There's several government buildings that are there, and it was actually supposed to be for public use. That's what it was supposed to be, as addressed in the video. And again, if anyone wishes to borrow, they're actually, if you have a library card at Fletcher, they are free for borrowing. And there are two DVDs. My husband and I, we actually have a copy of a VHS copy. So if you don't have a DVD player, then you can borrow ours if you wish.
And I'll end this segment with a quote from Ethan Allen, which I think relates to this topic and many others that we might discuss on the show. This is his quote. Coloring a crime with specious pretense of law only adds to the criminality of it, for it subverts the very design of law, prostituting it to the vilest purposes. End quote. I think this is exactly what local governments are doing with past and present eminent domain abuse. They have subverted the law to steal property, and it's simply criminal. Heavenly, you have a special announcement regarding Ira, right?
I'd like to announce that Jay Leff, a senior at Burlington High School, was recently elected to the Board of Directors of the National Youth Rights Association, known as NYRA, on August 6, 2005, at the annual meeting in New York City. In a competitive race with 14 candidates vying for 9 board positions, he received the second highest number of votes. He currently serves as president of the Vermont chapter of the National Youth Rights Association. In Vermont, the group's been working on lowering the voting age and the drinking age. He co-founded Youth for Democracy, which works to foster a dialogue between youth and politicians, and also serves as the Youth Police Commissioner in the city of Burlington. The National Youth Rights Association is dedicated to defending the civil and human rights of young people in the United States. We're comprised of over 5,000 members across the country, and believe certain basic rights of intrinsic parts of the American citizenship transcend the age or status limits. As the world's leading democracy, the United States should not lag behind other nations in granting first-class citizenship to its young people. NIRA aims to achieve its goals through educating people about the youth rights, working with public officials to devise fitting policy solutions to problems affecting young people, and empowering young people to work on their own behalf. And I also am the vice chair of the Vermont chapter of the National Youth Rights Association. If you'd like more information about us, feel free to visit our website, which is listed on Ethan Allen Radio's homepage.
Next, I'd like to talk a little bit about the Marant plant decision we have to make as a city, where we have to decide what we're going to do with it after all these years. There was a segment in the last North Ave News from Carmen George where she talked about it, like where we are in the process, and I'll read what she said. She said, "We are moving forward with phase two. If you want any information about the process, the building, or to see a list of ideas submitted, visit the Community and Economic Development Office, CETO, at cetoburlington.org. How can someone get involved now? If you didn't submit your idea already, email it ASAP to nwarner@ci.burlington.vt.us. Again, that's nwarner@ci.burlington.vt.us, or you can call Nick at 865-7173. In September, there will be a public discussion to develop ideas further. Residents of Burlington will get to vote on the plan for the Moran plant site at the March ballot." And that's what she said. One thing I like to throw in there is that I remember when we went to the original, I guess it was kind of a tour of the building, the Moran plant, the card that you could submit for ideas, it something bothered me about it. It stated on it that the idea that gets the most ideas that get the most amount of votes or most amount of cards entries will not necessarily be on the ballot, essentially, which means that the committees will essentially be choosing the ones that will go on the ballot, and they may not necessarily be the most popular. What are your thoughts on that, Heavenly?
Yeah, actually, the Parks and Rec Committee of the City Council, which Carmen, our councilor here in Ward 7, is a part of, they actually determined, they appointed a subcommittee of this Moran process. It's called the Moran ITRC Committee, I guess. And they work under the CETO office, the Community Economic Development Office. And they have held a couple of meetings so far, but unfortunately they are at 8:30 in the morning. Unfortunately, I would be attending, but unfortunately due to work, I'm unable to. But the next meeting they have on their schedule is for August 31st, which is a Wednesday. And again, that's at 8:30 in the morning. It's held at the CETO office, which is right besides, actually above City Market. So if anyone wishes to participate in those meetings, feel free. It's open to the public. And again, as Carmen said, mentioned in her column, there will be a public process being involved in September, which basically just to make sure that they get the public input for the process.
Yeah, and hopefully they take the people's voice on this. You know, it's a public piece of land. They should really listen to the public on it. It seems like by a lot of different informal polls I've seen several, overwhelmingly people want to see the green space. But I just don't think they really want that. I think the mayor and many in the public works department want to see that area developed, and mayor himself has argued that we already have tons of green space on the waterfront. Maybe so, but that's what the people want. That's what they should get. When if you're going to have land that's public, it should be what the people want, not what he wants.
Yeah, actually, he was, throughout the whole Moran process that took place over the winter last year and early this year, he was actually pushing very hard, because he's actually a member of YMCA himself. He was pushing very hard to get the Moran, to actually have the YMCA at Moran. And for those that don't know, aren't familiar with the process, the Moran process so far, basically the city wanted to give the Moran plant area to YMCA for a 99-year lease for $1 a year. And that's pretty very cheap real estate, from what I can understand.
Yeah, I think that was a major reason why the item got defeated. I think if it was a more reasonable deal, more people might have signed on board. But I think there was a lot of different reasons. People just didn't like the idea of it being transferred to a corporation at all. They just wanted it to be public. You know, some people were really strongly wanted it as a park or completely public, where you'd have unlimited access anywhere. You didn't need, like, otherwise you'd need to pay for a membership. Yes, they have different scholarship programs, but still, you're basically, you need to ask permission to go in the building. So it's, and people just didn't want to have to be that. You know, they wanted something that they owned as a community on community property. And they just were, yeah, they just didn't want them there at all. And then there was people that, another side that were strongly against the deal, which I think is kind of where we fell on, Heavenly and I. We just didn't really like the deal. I mean, if it's, I mean, to give away this prime property for such a low rate for such a long time, which is basically, is everyone that's here in Burlington will be dead by the time 99 years is. So it's basically, for our lives, for our sake, it's lifetime contract over the land. And it was just, you know, terrible to see it for $1 a year. And it was funny because I remember at the public forums, people started going up offering more. Like, someone offered $2, someone offered $5. It just, you know, it's kind of led me, maybe that'd be a good idea to put it up to an auction.
Yeah, and actually, you could, that way, if you did have a, like, an auction for it, like, one friend of ours offered $10 for it. But, yeah, if there was an auction, then you can get a lot more money for it, and it actually be off the city's hands. That way, we wouldn't have to deal with it ourselves as a city for the taxpayers. And also, in regards to the YMCA appealing for the Moran plant, they actually, one of their arguments for going into the Moran is that they were so overcrowded and they needed room to expand their facilities. Well, Jeremy and I, they actually had, YMCA had an open house in December, the beginning, middle of December, I believe, last year. And Jeremy and I actually went to this open house. And granted, this is an open house. The public's welcome to go anywhere in there and check out the facilities, right, for free. And they had free food, too, which, to draw more people in, right? So we went in there about, I don't know, 3 hours before they ended it, and there was hardly anyone in the YMCA building itself. And we can go into a room, there may not even be a person in there. You'd be the only person in there. So I actually wrote a letter to the editor of the Free Press regarding this, and they stopped using their argument. So.
Yeah, it was surprising. I have nothing, you know, of course, that's what I think. A lot of the opponents of this plan are not opposing the Y. And I think some of the people that were for the Y going to Moran Plant think that we all just hate the Y and we just don't want them anywhere in the city. That's not true. I've talked to a lot of people who are opponent, and even people that are members of the Y and people that work there were opposed to it because they didn't want it moved, because right now it's in a great location, and that would be, moving it down to where the Moran plant is would be very difficult for many people to get to. They were talking about shuttling people there. Once again, that would have been a $50,000 cost to the city that we would have been taking up to shuttle people from parking lots around the city to there. And there's a lot of people that are saying, you know, particularly mothers with children, that said they're not going to be going on the shuttle bus during below 0 degree weather to bring their kids to the Y. Mm-hmm. Right now they can park at the library, park various parking garages around the city and get there pretty quickly, easily. And that's the way they wanted to keep it. You have any more thoughts on that?
Yeah, actually, in regards to, for those that don't know about the process that underwent last winter, the city was actually going to be undergoing a $3 to $4 million, I believe, estimate for the infrastructure. So that's just basically to get the water, the sewer, the streets up to par for the Moran, if the YMCA went to Moran. So we'd have that cost. We'd have the shuttle bus, if they wanted to, the shuttle bus, which is another $50,000 per year. Then they actually don't even know if the site's contaminated, because one of the meetings they had for the Moran, it was actually brought up from a person that used to work there at the Moran plant that they actually used to empty, I believe, generators or transformers into the soil there at Moran. So the soil may actually be contaminated. They don't even know that yet.
Yeah, that's certainly another concern. Although they did say that any problems that would occur would be the responsibility of the YMCA. And the next topic I'd like to cover is the armory. It was something that Councillor Carmen George talked about in her Counselor's Corner, part of the North Ave News. She answered a couple questions. And the first question was, what is the status of the transfer? The state is giving the building on Goss Court and the new North End to the city of Burlington. The attorneys are working out all the details of the transfer. At this time, it is still a property of the state. Next question was, how is the space going to be used? She said, the goal is to have a space that is developed in partnership with the residents of Burlington. The process will begin in October. Now, I'm not too sure myself on what I'd like to see happen with the Armory, but one concern I do have is that whatever happens, I fear that it's going to be yet another burden on the taxpayers of Burlington, and at this point, I don't think they can bear any more burden. So I think, you know, to keep in mind whatever happens, just keep in mind what the tax burden is going to be over the future. And one thing I'd like to see discussed is maybe some kind of user fee for the using the building or something, somehow, some way that it can finance itself, the just the maintenance and management of the general building. What do you think?
Yeah, actually, if they do go through with the Armory project, there's actually this coming year, for 2006, there's going to be budget increases based upon what we heard from the Board of Finance and the City Council, and also recently from the Free Press's coverage of the school board. The school board's actually facing like a $2 million deficit, I believe, in their budget. And so that's going to be a cause for, I assume, a cause for increase in the taxes and property taxes there. And, of course, we have been a recent property and tax increase due to the reappraisal. So if the Armory does go through, it'll be even more of an increase for the Parks and Rec budget, which in turn will be higher taxes for the city. Now, granted, this Armory location, it's called the Armory because the National Guard used to use this facility for training or storage, I believe. And from what I've learned from the presentations they've had at our neighborhood planning assembly. Now, it appears that most of the people, our fellow residents here in the North End, would like it to be like a meeting space, also a space for the new North End Youth Center, which I believe currently used it for a short time before it was transferred. It's in the process of being transferred to the city. But if it actually does go through to be developed for Parks and Rec use, I'm not sure if the rest of the city and the other wards would be with us on this, because that would mean more property tax burden to them.
Yeah, that's correct. That's I've been saying that. I just got to be careful. But you know, any new thing we take on, it's just going to be more and more cost over time. So you just got to be careful and keep a lookout for that. And I urge anyone that has any thoughts on, well, what should be there, and any of the concerns, if you have concerns about the budgeting, to contact your counselor and let them know. That's they're depending on people's input to decide on these kind of things. So go ahead and contact them. And of course, we have the link on the website as usual. Do you have anything else?
Also, if you have the problem where I sometimes do, if your counselor, one or both of your counselors don't have actually listened to you or pay attention to your feelings on a particular issue, you're welcome, more than welcome, to come to the council meetings. They usually have one or two a month. They're held at Contois Auditorium at City Hall, and it's just off of Church Street, and the public forums start at 7:30 at night. Basically, they give you 3 minutes to express your feelings on a particular issue, and they are, the whole council and the mayor is there for you to speak to directly.
Yeah, that's a good point. Heavenly and I, we've been going to pretty much every city council meeting since like last October, I believe. And it's a good spot to have your, they might not always listen to you, but it's a good point. It's a good place to have them put out there in the public, and there's other people that listen. And it's oftentimes you'll have Channel 3 or Channel 5, and Channel 17 is always there covering it, so you can get your opinion broadcast out there. A lot of people, I find, tend to find the actual public forums part a little intimidating, because you're put there at a spot in front of a mic and you're in front of the whole council. But chances are, when you go speak, there's a lot of people behind you that are feeling the same way you are, and they'll usually support, you'll find, it helps bring some supporters with you that'll cheer with you when you say something that they all like. It makes it easier, I found. But just go up there and say your piece, and they'll consider it.
Yeah, and actually, if you feel a little intimidated by addressing the full council or the mayor, there's actually another forum where you can address your city councilors one-on-one, provided that they can actually go. It's actually, as I mentioned, the neighborhood planning assemblies. There's one or two for each ward. And if you know which ward you're in, if you don't know which ward you're in, it's actually listed on the CETO website, which is cetoburlington.org. Basically, you can they have a map and where to figure out your ward is. There's wards 1 through 7. Wards 2 and 3 and 4 and 7 are actually combined MPAs. And they are also, all the meeting spaces, the times, and locations are listed on the CETO website. And that's basically where you can address your concerns with the city or within your neighborhood if you have any issues or concerns.
Yeah, that's a good point. NPA is a really good place to go to get started with speaking in public, because it's usually a much smaller group, and it's a lot less intimidating because everyone is sitting essentially in the same type of chairs and tables, so no one looks much higher level than you are. You're all kind of at the same level. Makes it easier, and you can stand or sit from, usually you just stand from your chair and talk. You don't have to go in front of anyone. And chances are you can actually sit right next to your counselors and have little side conversations about your concerns. So you don't even have to address everyone. You can just start talking to your counselor, whereas the city council meetings are far off. And another thing reminds me of is when you go to the city council meeting, you speak up. You're talking to them, but most likely they will not respond to your comments. And I find a lot of people go there expecting a response, and then they don't get one, and they feel offended, and that there's nothing else they can do. But that's what the NPAs are for, is you can go there, and you usually get a response of some sort, especially if you're talking directly with your counselor. That's a much better way to actually get a dialogue between you and your counselor. And sometimes we even see state reps show up. And occasionally the mayor will show up, so you can talk to a lot of your elected officials that way. And so I'd check that out.
Recently, while I was going over the North Ave News, I noticed the monthly column from Jean Popecki and this and that. I noticed a very interesting situation she commented about. I'll read it to you here, just a portion of it. About a month ago, city decided all of its potholed streets needed sweeping. The signs everywhere warned car owners not to park in the street the night the cleaners are supposed to come around. Well, unfortunately, there's one street in the New North End, Rivers Edge Drive, which is about in the border between Burlington and Colchester. It's technically a private street. People that live there have the street plowed in the winter. The city doesn't do it. And they sweep it themselves. Along came the city street sweepers, busily going down this private street that didn't have a single warning sign posted anywhere along it. First came the tow trucks that hauled away 7 cars. The car owners thought there had been mass thievery going on. It took them some time to find out the city hauled away their cars from their private street and added insult to injury by charging each owner that got towed $75 to tell them where their cars had been taken. Next, the owners tried to get these illegal fines back. The total of the unfair fines was $525. When one neighbor went to the public works to try and figure out what had happened, why he was fined for something that wasn't illegal, try to get his money back, he was treated in the most shameful manner by an employee of the street department. It's a whole disgrace to the city and the way it works. There was little or no consideration for the taxpayers who are forced to pay an unfair fee for something that should have never happened in the first place. And there's an apology due to each person on that street, especially the ones that are forced to pay the illegal charge. They should have this unfair ticket money returned with an apology from the city employee who treated a taxpayer disrespectfully. After all, that employee's salary is drawn from tax bills paid by these folks. And then she asks, can we see this mess corrected soon? Well, basically, this whole situation reminds me of when Jeremy and I had our car hit the pothole earlier this spring, just off of Manhattan Drive and LaFountain Street. Basically, their city isn't being held accountable for their actions. Well, in this case, they're actually covering an area that isn't even delegated by the city. It's actually supposed to be covered by the property owners in that area. So basically, the city's making actually using city resources on a private property, and they're actually having these property owners pay more than $500 for fines that they shouldn't even be fined for.
Yeah, this situation is pretty interesting. Our pothole damage. That was a lack of performance by the city. They just didn't do anything to protect the holes in the street. So there was really no particular people you could blame. It was just because everyone just kind of failed the city that way with these potholes in the public works. But in this instance, there was should be particular people that were accountable for this. And obviously, this was actually a faulty action by the city, and something should be done to. They should just, forget these fines and maybe even pay them something for taking their property without any cost. But I know that's not how things work. The city doesn't owe anyone anything when they mess up, unfortunately. And they should. Hopefully something does get resolved, and maybe we'll see something, a follow-up to the story in the paper next month.
Yes, actually I wrote a little letter to the editor of the Free Press about a month or so ago in regard to the Greenbelt issue that was being brought up by the Parks and Rec Department. They claimed to be against the resolution for the Greenbelt ordinance. Basically, the ordinance called for people being fined $50 up to $500, I believe, a day for plantings that were occurring in the city's Greenbelt. Now, basically, that would be, and the Greenbelt also called for people, the residents of that were living beside the Greenbelt to upkeep city property, because that Greenbelt area is not owned by the resident, it's owned by the city, because they have a 9-foot easement away from the road that's owned by the city. So, if the person in question did not upkeep the Greenbelt, then the city would be able to fine them the amount for each day that it happened until it was fixed. And basically, I just wrote a letter in my letter to the editor saying that the city is forcing everyone to work on city property if this Greenbelt was to go into place. And basically, why should you be doing this if the Parks and Rec Department is asking for volunteers to clean up graffiti and off the state DMV building and off the Letty Park racquetball courts that are there? Basically, I believe that the department heads, like Parks and Rec Department heads, should be accountable for not keeping their employees up to the work that they're supposed to be doing. That if they're not doing appropriate work for in their area, then they should be held accountable. Basically, I think that's what happened in this case with the towing of the cars. If Parks and Rec declines to name who was responsible for this, then the department head should be held accountable.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, they are related, all these things, and that's just it. We as citizens need to keep them accountable. We need to speak up when we see things like this, like public forums, NPA. Tell your counselors if you see anything that's just not being done. And I mean, they're asking. No one's... they're asking for people to do these things, volunteer their time to do things for the park, and people do it, but we don't. At the same time, their budget increases every year. Just need to be, looking into these things and speaking up. Otherwise, it'll continue to happen. It's just a matter of we need to keep them accountable and keep our counselors keeping them accountable. Need to watch these kind of things. And that concludes this show. Again, thanks for listening. Please feel free to leave your comments and suggestions at the website. That's at ethanallenradio.org. Be sure to sign up for our email list if you haven't already to get the updates. Bye.